For the past 7 decades, Tim Matheson has been an on-screen favorite in Hollywood. In his new memoir, Damn Glad to Meet You, My 7 Decades in the Hollywood Trenches, Matheson looks behind the scenes of his illustrious career and reveals what it's like to learn from and work alongside the greats, including Lucille Ball, Dick Van Dyke, Steven Spielberg, and Aaron Sorkin. He also talks about how he transitioned from acting to directing, his role in The West Wing that nabbed him 2 Emmy nominations, and so much more. He has dedicated his career to show business. He's best known for roles in Animal House, Magnum Force, Fletch, and Virgin River, which has its 7th season premiere on Netflix. It is a great pleasure to welcome Tim Matheson back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you back. Thank you very much. This has been, you know, I was thinking about this as I was preparing of how much I enjoyed reading your book, what has it been like talking about that, going out and sharing that story with the world?
Well, the feedback has been great, very positive, and it's rewarding to me because basically I just wanted to share with the audience, you know, the sort of the transitions and changes that have happened in the last 6.5, 7 decades of my life and in Hollywood, and the lessons I learned from the old timers, you know, like Jackie Gleason and Lucille Ball, Bob Hope, and Mickey Rooney and Clint Eastwood, you know, and just that generation that a lot of the younger people never got a chance to work with or even know about. And to learn from the mistakes that I made in my career or the oversights that I, you know, fell into and how I corrected course during, you know, my career, and how much it changed from generation to generation. So it was great to just go over that and people responded well to it. And I try to keep it fun and light, and, you know, and then the backstory of certainly like working on Animal House with Belushi and on The Quest with Kurt Russell and, you know, Magnum Force with Clint Eastwood and Yours, Mine, and Ours with Lucille Ball. And so I've been fortunate enough to have all these different experiences in every phase of my career. And even now into a whole new phase of streaming show, like being on Virgin River, from going into its 7th and 8th season.
And I want to get to that. When you start a project and you know you're going to work with Lucille Ball, for example, I mean, what do you go in thinking? Because obviously, you know that this person already is a legend.
Yeah. I mean, with Lucy, it was... I mean, she's a comic genius. I mean, I Love Lucy was perhaps one of the first, if not the greatest, sitcom. They invented the sitcom, and she was one of the greatest physical comedians ever. And she was also a brilliant executive and business person. She ran a studio. She was the first female executive of a movie studio, TV studio. She ran Desilu Studios, and which produced The Untouchables and Mission Impossible and Star Trek, and as well as her show and others. And,
right.
And so I was just in awe of her, and she was very generous and kind to me to share her experiences and ask about how I, you know, what I was looking forward to doing, what I wanted to do, and give advice to me on how things are done and what happened in her career. And, you know, on the set, she was tough. There was no, like, you know, talking about, you know, the good old days and anything like that. She was always present exactly and only in the moment of the scene. And which was a great lesson to learn, is that you really, she said to me, if you want to be a star, you have to act like a star. And what I thought, and what I took that to mean was, you've got to deliver a star performance every day, every scene, every moment.
I think we may have talked about this the last time, but I still find it fascinating, which is the idea of longevity. As I mentioned in the introduction, you know, some 7 decades of work that you've done, you've had this long career, but you're still around. You're still very vibrant. You're still doing great work. And you have this show that will have a brand new season and then another one. I mean, that is, I would think that's every actor's dream to keep working.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because every actor thinks that, or this actor did, that every job is going to be your last. The last day, you don't know, and as a freelance actor, you don't know what's next.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, there's a few times in your life you may, oh, I know I'm going to do this next thing or whatever. But it usually, you don't know if the phone's going to ring, you're going to get the next audition or whatever. And so there's two parts of being an actor. There's your craft and your work as an artist and your work to learn how to embody human emotion and behavior in the context of a story. And then there's the business of getting a manager, an agent, a lawyer, making the best deal, making sure you got out the auditions, making sure you're prepared for the auditions, making sure you've trained yourself as an actor to get better and change. And, you know, like to get Animal House, I had to, I got tired of the parts I was getting and the roles I was playing, sort of like the straight guy, you know, the straight, normal, kind of boring characters. And so I took an improv class. I joined a group that we founded called the Groundlings here in Los Angeles, an improv class. And it just changed my perception as an actor and my capability as an actor. And it fortunately, when I got the audition for Animal House, I nailed it, you know.
When you say you nailed it in the sense of, did you know exactly what they were looking for?
Yeah, they were looking for anybody but me. That's what I was told. They said, no, he's a surfer. My hair was long, and he's a surfer or a cowboy. That's what we've seen, and he's not preppy. It's not right. And I had to beg to get an audition, and I weaseled my way in and finally got an audition. But the good news was that I got to do the scenes with another improv actor, Peter Riegert, who I think had already been cast as Boone. And so we just hit it off, and it was like rock and roll. It was like two musicians playing that played this. We're playing the same song, you know. It was just, and it was, we fell into it like we were brothers, and we hit it off, and we got laugh after laugh from, you know, the writers and the executives and the director, and it just worked. And it was one of those one in a million things, because how many auditions have I gone on where you're just sitting in the room and they go, thank you very much, okay, bye, you know, and then next, or it was great, that was great, next, you know, I mean, it's like you never know what's going to happen.
With Virgin River, this is, as I said, a show that's going into its seventh season. What was your anticipation going into this, and did you think that this would last seven seasons?
We had no idea. I mean, I was... You know, when I first read the script, I was very, it was similar. I was playing a doctor, a senior doctor, and running his clinic. And then he's sort of forced into accepting a co-worker, a nurse practitioner in this case, that he is younger and a woman and somebody he didn't like and didn't want. He didn't need a partner, you know, and I was kind of like not pleased with her and didn't like her for the first season or two. Until she earned her way. And then, but it was very similar to a show I had done, which was a broader comedy called Heart of Dixie with Rachel Bilson, where she was forced upon me and my clinic in a small Georgia southern town in Alabama. And and I thought when I read the script that, well, I love this, but I don't think they're going to offer it to me because I just sort of played a character not dissimilar to this in another show. And in the old network days, the networks and studios would say, no, we don't, we want to change gears here. We don't want somebody who's already played this kind of part. Well, with the streaming world, they were aware of the audience response to me and to the show Heart of Dixie, and they appreciated that, and they wanted that in this show, that somebody that the audience knew they'd accept in this role and that was adept at doing it, and they happily invited me to join, and I was thrilled. We had no idea. I mean, it took us three seasons. We shot three seasons before it ever came on the air. And during the last week of shooting in the third season, during the height of COVID, we premiered, And while we were all together on the last day of shooting the third season, it was announced that we were the number one show on Netflix all over the world. And it was like, we didn't know. We had no idea. Nobody, you know, we'd seen the shows, but nobody else had seen them. So we didn't know if the audience was going to respond to this or not. Netflix, in their wisdom, I guess, you know, they knew better. So they knew what they had. We didn't.
Tim Matheson is our guest, and the show Virgin River will mark its seventh season, being released on March 12th on Netflix. Let me ask you, I talked to you about longevity, and but there's also the longevity of the work that you do, and Animal House being a perfect example, still so such a vibrant part of our culture. I'm currently, for maybe the third or fourth time in my life, watching West Wing. Again, a show that just keeps up and is it is as great now as it was when it originally aired.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to be in a few of those, and you never know. You never really know what's going to work or not going to work. I mean, the West Wing, from the minute it was on the air, it was in the old network days. I'd walk down the street, and I think I was in the second or third episode, and people were just, hey, John Hoynes, hey, Mr. Vice President, and love the show. I mean, people just were just a fan right away. I mean, it was an instant hit because of the caliber of the writing, the caliber of the acting, and just the currency of its philosophy and its statements. And it was not like anything anybody had ever seen on TV before. And also, they one thing Aaron Sorkin did, they do these walk and talks where it was like two pages of dialogue walking through the West Wing without a cut. So you need really adept and good actors to be able to pull that off, and you need actors who know their dialogue and can pace it up and play smart people, dedicated people trying to do the best and be of service to the nation. And that's what the West Wing was about. And it was a style, and it was a depth of character and of story that we had not seen on TV for a long time.
And it's an interesting role too, because it's the closest thing that show has to a villain-like character.
Yes. John Hoynes was he had issues with Jed Bartlett. He didn't disguise them. There was some rough and tumble during the primaries, and there were some hard feelings between us, and that those were never resolved totally, I think. I was always sort of on the outside, felt. And it was in many ways modeled after, I mean, Dede Meyers was one of the sort of early Clinton advisors, and she was on the show helping us make sure these things were done properly, and any questions we had. And she kind of counseled me that he was sort of like Lyndon Johnson to Jack Kennedy. He was an old politician, a seasoned politician, who this young upstart or younger upstart outsider had taken the mantle from him, and I should have been the nominee, not him. And that was sort of the dynamic between the two. So there was always that tension there between us.
One of the other things that just blows me away, and I think I have this number right, but if you asked me before I looked this up, I would say that you were in roughly, a quarter, a third of the episodes,
Yeah.
and then I learned you were only in 13.
Well, I mean, yeah, I honestly don't even remember how many I did. You know, it was like three to five a year. And I mean, so I was, and it was so funny because every time we'd shoot, they'd have a scene, say, in the vice president's office. It was never the same office. It was always wherever the easiest location was. Well, we're going to convert this to your office, because it was like, it's just an office, you know. It's like, it doesn't have to be exactly the same office every time. So it was more about what I did than where I did it, and what I represented. And it was a wonderful opportunity. I know, Aaron Sorkin is one of the great writers of our generations, and fabulous director, and it was a treat to work with him and an honor to work with all of the fine actors that were on that show. And it just brought up, it was like playing tennis at Wimbledon. Here were the best people in the business that you got to be in the scenes with. And just it made everybody better. It was great.
Was it difficult for you, or is it still to be I mean, I think it would be lovely to be known for these roles, and to be have people come up to you, and I assume that is one of the ones that you were most recognized for.
Yes. Yeah. The West Wing, certainly. Animal House. Fletch.
Oh, I love Fletch.
Fletch is
Oh, what a
brilliant.
movie.
Just brilliant. And Chevy couldn't have been better. I mean, that and Clark Griswold in Vacation movies was, or, I think, two of his finest characters. And also Clint Eastwood. I got to work with Clint on Magnum Force, and I was the voice of Johnny Quest. So there were these seminal jobs that I got. And wonderful performers that I worked with that taught me so much and also just kept me in the game, and so that I wanted to keep searching for the next wonderful opportunity that would be like that. And you never know which one it's going to be.
You're one of those actors too that because you've had these incredible roles, and then also when you pop up and you're watching something there and you appear on screen, to me that's a very calming presence.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's great. I mean, I just try to make the character as real as possible and as personal as possible and find the true emotion within myself that I can relate to what's going on with the character. And it's just like the old slogan, no acting, please. It's just I think Mel Brooks said it best. He said, if crying was acting, my Aunt Minnie would have been a star. So it's like it's not about that. It's about being true to the writing and the character within the structure of the story, and bringing the truth to that with the style of it,
Is there something out there that you still have your eye on to accomplish? Some role, some type of role?
Oh, I'm always looking. I'm always looking. I would love to find a project to direct and produce that would be exciting, because it would be a good story to present to an audience. And as an actor, it's sort of like being a detective. You're looking for that character that you have to peel the onion and get down inside and find what's the true story underneath all of this character, and what's going on, and what motivates him or her, and what's at the basis of it all. And it's a great challenge, and it's no more of a challenge, no greater challenge than doing Shakespeare, which I would look forward to doing again. And so I'm always looking for the next challenge. I mean, if, to me, that's what keeps you in the game, keeps you smart and young and fulfilled and in the danger zone, because you never know if you're gonna make it or not.
You like being in the danger zone.
I think so. I think it's good. I think an actor's always nervous. I mean, I did the Lucy show, or here's the, I think it was Here's Lucy. She did it with her daughter, Lucy Arnaz.
Yes.
And we did our first scene, and I make an entrance halfway through the scene with Lucy, and Lucy Arnaz are out there talking. And I come to pick up Lucy Arnaz as I'm her date. And I get out there and I look at Lucille Ball. I'm exchanging my dialogue with her. And I was very nervous. And I look at Lucy and she's very nervous. And she bumps a line. She drops a line. And then she goes, cut, cut, cut. And the director said, oh, we had an airplane, Lucy. We're going to, it was just for the audience. But we did, you took it again. And I thought, all these years and all the things that she's done, and as great as she is, she's nervous. All actors are nervous. I think it's sort of what's motivates us and drives us. I'm sure there's other actors, some actors, it doesn't happen, but it's like those guys on Saturday Night Live. They're all on the spot right now. Is it going to work? It's not going to work. And that's a great charge and a great challenge to a performer.
The good news here is that Virgin River has its seventh season released March 12th on Netflix. Even better, Tim Matheson has a wonderful memoir out called Damn Glad to Meet You, My 7 Decades in the Hollywood Trenches. Tim Matheson, a delight to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world, and thank you very much for being with us once again.
Joe, thanks. A pleasure to be here. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Take care. Again, season 7 of Virgin River is now out on Netflix. Tim Matheson is also the author of the memoir Damn Glad to Meet You, My 7 Decades in the Hollywood Trenches. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.